Here we go. I am Matt. This is the Anarchist Investor Live, coming at you every Monday through Friday at noon Eastern. Let me pull this banner off. I'm going to throw the other shameless self-promotion banner up there. Make sure to subscribe, follow, leave some comments, likes, whatever you do on whatever platform you watch or listen to this broadcast. Do me a favor, help me out. The algorithm does not like me. I don't pull punches. I talk some trash. We're actually going to talk some trash about the Fed today. And so you got to help me out. So to get this pumped out there, I definitely need all of the help I can get from viewers, listeners, and people that follow the podcast and the Anarchist Investor. So help me out there. And a reminder, subscribe, whether it's down in the description, there's a link, or if you just type into your browser, anarchistinvestor.substack.com, you can subscribe to my free newsletter. There's also a paid version, but we'll be talking about that at a later date. But you can subscribe for free. And on April 1st, I'm giving away free silver, actual money. I will be giving away on April 1st. So you got to be in it to win it. You got to subscribe. So definitely follow that link or put it into your web browser and subscribe. Plus, you get a kick-ass newsletter in your email every single day. In fact, I put one out today. I'll be talking about that in a second. Let's see where we're at. I had up the hopefully putting up the trading screen leading into the beginning of the live helps a little bit so that there's no dead space. I'm working on this production value for you. What do we got? We got Bitcoin. Bitcoin is taking a little bit of a breather today. Can't be to the moon every single day. Okay. We're hovering just under 72,000. So yesterday put in a brand new all-time high at 72K plus. And now we're hovering right around 71.5, 71.6, give or take. So Bitcoin's taking a little bit of a breather. Same thing with Ethereum. Ethereum has pulled back a little bit today, down about 2.25%, depending on which chart you look at and when they kind of cut off the trading day. But yeah, Ethereum's taking a little step back today. There are some cryptos that are running today. Solana continues to be strong. A couple of red candles here after a push early this morning. But Solana is still in the green for the day. So still button up against 150 per coin. So that's something that I continue to watch. Obviously, I have a vested interest. Something I don't really have anything in, but is making a big move today is Avalanche. I think most big kind of like crypto trading channels and stuff like that, a lot of them lump Solana and Avalanche together as primary tokens because they're these kind of like, you know, ecosystem plays that have a lot of development happening off of the top of them. And so I keep an eye on this one as well. It goes right hand in hand with Solana. And today it's knocking it out of the park, up, you know, 11%. On my screen. So making a big move up through 50 per coin. Also, Matic slash Polygon is taking a little bit of a break today. So I'm still watching the mayor of Matic on X. If you don't follow the mayor of Matic on X, you should definitely check that account out. He is calling for at least $1.30 price discovery here for Polygon slash Matic. So definitely keep an eye on that. And along, you know, in sympathy with Bitcoin, Ethereum, everything else, crypto.com, CRO is taking a little bit of a break today, as well as a number of the others. Hive, man, Hive keeps pumping. We had some big purchases here of some Hive people getting in here at, you know, the 45, 46, 47 cent level. Since then, it's kind of pulled back from those big transactions, but Hive continues to chug higher. What else am I looking at? So, interestingly enough, I wrote this morning my article, and I'm actually going to pull the screen share down here really quickly. I'm going to put up the article that I wrote today. I started looking at gold and silver backed cryptocurrencies. This is not a new thing. In fact, Rob, a enthusiastic enjoyer of the show and follower of me on X, noted that Peter Schiff back in 2006 actually postulated the idea of a gold-backed cryptocurrency as a fantastic option to kind of embrace both of the positives of, you know, hard money being gold and silver, and then also the transportability, transactability, you know, the ability to kind of like make microtransactions for everyday purchases and sales. of crypto and marrying those two things together and making them have a baby. There are some providers out there that are doing that. In fact, I'm going to be looking into it. And in fact, they actually offer a whole myriad of different options or different services that come along with it. So you're talking about, you know, custodianship of gold and silver. You're talking about being able to make an annual percentage yield on the gold and silver that you hold with them. You're also talking about transactability in terms of having a debit card. They also offer a cold storage crypto wallet. And so your the crypto that's backed by the gold and silver is readily convertible between other cryptos as well, if you want to transact in crypto versus transacting in fiat currency. And so I'm going to be looking into that. It's going to be, should be something that's really interesting going forward to see what the experience is with that, what the fee structures are and everything like that. I'm going to cover that in a later post. Another reason why you should sub for free. But let's see, what else do we got going on today? We have the consumer price index, the cooks over at the Fed and I guess who puts this out, the BLS or something like that, put out the CPI, and they came out and they did their cooking. And even with all of their cooking, the core CPI is still up. We're still over 3%. And depending on which numbers you're looking at, the annualized rate is still, you know, 3.5, 3.8%, almost 4%. You know, this quote unquote fight against inflation. Inflation seems to be winning, man. Like, I mean, we're not up at 9% anymore, if you believe the CPI. I don't really, but if you believe these numbers, we're still elevated. And so the one thing I wanted to talk to you about today is something I've brought up just kind of in passing in previous live streams and in previous articles. There's a number of Fed Reserve members that have given talks in the past about their intent to target 2% inflation, but that means they're targeting it on an average, not on a day-to-day basis, not on a year-to-year basis. And so that essentially means if you have a number of years at below 2% inflation, there's got to be some other years where they're targeting above 2% inflation. Now, I don't want to get into conspiracy theories here, but the COVID pandemic presented a incredible opportunity for the Federal Reserve. I'll just put it that way, for them to try and get right, because the decade leading up to 2020 showed below trend, or at least their intended trend of 2% inflation. We were below that for a number of years leading up to 2020. Now, there's also a deeper kind of conspiracy here that you could go into, where a lot of economists and a lot of market participants were actually calling for a deep recession starting in 2020, and that essentially the Fed trying to take the supposed punch bowl away of quantitative easing and a couple of other things that they were using to prop up the market in 2018 actually caused things to get roiled, and it almost fell apart then, okay? So they're actually targeting higher than 2% inflation. Rob chiming in. That's me. That is you, Rob. Thank you. I appreciate it. And a reminder, if you want to talk about anything, go ahead, throw it in the comments. We're live. I'll discuss anything. Even if you want to troll, I have fun with that too. The Fed back in, as early as I think 2016, was talking about below trend inflation being a bigger risk to them than, say, you know, deflation or other risks that they felt might be existential. And so they literally want inflation. They want currency debasement. All right. And in my article earlier today, actually, you know, walk in very general terms through the difference between money and currency. And there are two very different things. Okay. And so the Federal Reserve has intended to debase the currency. Like, they're very open about it. And they were lamenting back in the early 20-teens or mid 20-teens that they weren't debasing it quickly enough. we're not destroying the dollar quickly enough. And they were actually worried because in large part, our economy, the U.S. economy, and by proxy, the world economy, runs off of U.S. debt issuance. Okay, number one. And number two, off of essentially the world reserve currency being the US dollar and having to create more and more and more and more and more and more dollars every single year to keep the velocity of the flow of money and commerce going throughout the world. And that essentially debases the US currency. And by proxy also makes the poor poorer in the United States or any other countries where the, you know, say like lower half of income earners have most of their net worth, if anything, wrapped up in US dollars, if they're not completely underwater from debt. And it makes them poorer because of the debasement of the currency and the fact that most of their net worth is held in that medium. Okay. And it makes the rich richer because it makes the things that have actual physical asset value, right? Like gold and silver, like property, plant, equipment type stuff, things that if you dropped on your foot, it would hurt. It makes those things more valuable in relative terms compared to that currency. So it is literally a wealth transfer. And the Federal Reserve has said that they weren't able to do it enough. They weren't doing enough wealth transferring. Okay. Now, granted, that's if you don't understand the game, right? Which most people don't. So if you don't understand the game, then obviously you fall prey to that. If you do understand the game, you know, stack things like this, you buy into Bitcoin, you buy property and real estate, and that's how you invest. Okay. You also understand that the reason why the stock market doesn't reflect the actual economy is because what happens the economy and what happens in the stock market, you know, the stock market very much runs on inflation. And in fact, if I pull back up the chart today and we look at how the casino is doing today, give me 1 second to get the right chart up here. If we look at the S&P is having a good day. But wait a minute, I thought inflation was bad, right? I thought we were fighting inflation. I thought, you know, more inflation means the Federal Reserve has to keep rates higher for longer. Well, guess what? The stock market runs on inflation. Like literally, the disparity between how much GDP we have as a country versus what the overall value is of the stock market. And this relates to any country that runs off of fractional reserve banking and a fiat currency standard. That difference, the huge disparity between the performance of the stock market versus the performance of, the average Joe and Jane's daily work and what that earns and the assets that they're able to accumulate. A lot of it has to do with inflation. The bulk of it has to do with inflation. And so this led me to the conclusion that if you put kind of the pieces together, what the Federal Reserve is essentially doing, and you have to remember, I've refined my thesis here. A couple years ago, I would have told you that before I really started to dig, I was just kind of scratching at the surface. Before I really started to dig, I would have told you, you know, it's all going to hell in a handbasket. We're going to crash. There's going to be a giant recession or depression or, you know. And I've actually refined that thesis. I don't think that's the case anymore. I think the Federal Reserve is trying to fight against essentially the economic cycle that rules the day, okay? And I've said it in the past. You can only fight economics for so long, but economics are undefeated over a long enough of a time frame. They're trying to fight this 40-year cycle, and there's essentially a 40-year debt cycle where you go through low interest rates for 40 years, which is what we're coming out of, and typically you have like a lot of GDP growth and money's freely flowing. There's a lot of velocity of money and things like that. And so, yeah, you have inflation that's associated with it. Not very much saving. Saving is the last thing on people's mind. It's mostly consumption based and growth and everything like that. And then you go into a 40-year period that then has the opposite effect. You have to restructure all the bad debt that came out of that 40 years of growth. And then after the restructure, now saving becomes the priority. And people who lived through the 50s, 60s, and 70s understand this because savings was actually a thing then. You actually put money in your bank account. You actually, people were buying gold and silver until the federal government outlawed holding it and decided to take all of it, or tried to take all of it through the Confiscation Act. That was actually a thing. Like you actually saved money, and there was a base of value and assets that wasn't just accumulated by the wealthiest people. It was accumulated by the average Joe and Jane, the middle class. It's why there was a middle class throughout the 80s and 90s. That's become eroded because the 80s, 90s, 2000s, and 2010s have been the era of low interest rates, no saving, spending, okay, reckless spending on crap, right? Like how many, you know, there was a show, there's still a show called Hoarders. Okay. People just have homes full of crap. Okay. Sometimes it's garbage, but sometimes it's, you know, collectibles and plastic and, you know, overseas made stuff and IKEA furniture and all kinds of other things, right? Cheap, readily accessible goods that you don't need. You just want, right? Like you see it on the website and you hit buy it now, right? That era is coming to a close and the economics are shifting. But I think what the Federal Reserve is trying to do is fight against that. They're trying to fight the natural ebb and flow of the economy and the global economy at that. And they're doing it in concert with the other central banks around the globe. So what does that look like? Well, technically, during these time periods of savings, that creates the asset base to then essentially inflate away and leverage to then go through the next 40-year period of growth and expansion. Well, they don't want to go there. They just want to stay on growth and expansion. They don't want the actual natural course of events to play out. They're playing God. So essentially what they're doing is trying to unnaturally keep the inflation that normally would turn into disinflation, if not deflation, during those periods. And remember, during the, anyone was alive during the 50s, 60s, 70s, you know, the 70s was, the hallmark was like the inflation crisis, okay? But there were also still periods of deflation. 50s and 60s also are periods of deflation. And they don't want that on a global scale, but on a domestic scale, it's actually pretty good. Like, yes, there are jobs lost at the beginning portion of it, and there has to be a renormalization. But after the renormalization, people that have cash, that cash becomes more valuable. They actually can make up the stagger with the wealthy people that have, you know, used that collective wealth that was saved up to then lever up and borrow against and grow and things like that, right? It also gives people that were poor or, you know, asset poor but cash rich or currency rich, give them the opportunity to save and then use those savings to improve their life. They're shortchanging you that. They're trying to take that away from you, okay? They're trying to abnormally keep the inflation rate high, undermine and debase the currency, and essentially keep that wealth redistribution going up the chain, okay? And this is funny because, like, I don't want to get into a political diatribe here, but you almost kind of have to because the Federal Reserve is this entity that's essentially owned by the banks, but a lot of their policies and things like that are backed up or supplemented by the government, okay? And what's funny is so many people are like, oh, well, you know, Republicans are fiscally conservative, and so they're against the Federal Reserve. Well, that's not exactly true. I mean, that's gone back and forth throughout decades, right? Democrats know how to fix deficits, and they always fix the problems that are caused by the Republicans cutting taxes and things like that. And all the while, they're completely missing the actual answer. And the actual answer is, regardless of what happens at the federal level, what makes all of that back and forth and jockeying possible is the Federal Reserve essentially creating this constant source of debasement that is now this flow of capital, or not even capital, flow of value from the currency-rich people at the bottom of the earning curve to the people that are asset rich at the top. So why do you see such a big disparity between wealthy and poor right now? It's that dynamic playing out. I've also, you know, I grew up in a conservative household that was like, you know, Reagan is the best president ever. But, you know, a lot of people say, oh, Reaganomics and trickle down is wrong and all this other stuff. Well, yeah, to a certain extent, it's wrong. But at the same time, no one on the other side of the aisle that was like an anti-Reaganite is really identifying the problem that was persistent throughout both, you know, Republican and Democrat presidencies, as well as control of the federal government. And it's that the Federal Reserve was just constantly debasing the currency, right? It's like this kind of like stealth attack on your wealth that people don't really realize until you have periods like the last couple of years. And even with periods like the last couple of years, they still don't understand it. So if anything, I hope that this message gets out there to them, because what the Federal Reserve is really setting the table for here is a decade or so of higher inflation, meaning more currency debasement, But also, they've told you outright. Jerome Powell says it dozens and dozens of times. Below trend growth. What does below trend growth looks like? Looks like GDP not growing as much. Okay, which by the way makes the debasement worse, because when you increase the currency base, the monetary base has a somewhat of a direct relationship with how productive your economy is. And if the economy isn't getting more and more productive as you create more currency, that's how the debasement happens. Well, he's telling you we're going to continue higher inflation over a period of time and for an extended period of time. And you're also going to have below trend growth. And we're also going to see an uptick in unemployment. So he's taking the worst of this economic cycle that should be playing out and preserving that, right? But then he's also dragging the worst part from the old economic cycle into the new one. And he's not giving you the ability to make up the stagger. And so what does that look like? That looks like people from the middle class down, what's left of the middle class, having to decrease their standard of living every single year. It's already happened for several years. It's going to continue to happen. And so what you're talking about is potentially a decade or more of misery if you're in that lower half and you don't understand the game, right? I'm hoping to bring people some edification, some information, so that they can understand the game a little bit better, okay? So that when you own certain things, you're not harmed and you might even benefit from what the Federal Reserve is trying to do. If the Federal Reserve actually does succeed in what they're doing and they're able to fight the powers of economics for another 5 or 10 years, these things right here, silver in a stagflationary environment, low growth, high inflation, or higher than normal inflation, silver does amazingly well. Okay. Gold does well. Silver does well. Commodities do well. All right. And this is going to be something that I think people are going, they've lost 50, 60, 70s. They still kind of got it. Once the 70s hit and we're off the gold standard, we're off silver, Confiscation Act, all of a sudden people change their habits. I think we're going back to a time period where gold and silver are going to become staples of the middle class and the poor, if they get the message. If they don't, they're in for some really tough times. I mean, you're already having tough times. My wife and I were at Walmart before. We almost never go to Walmart. We're not big fans, but I mean, you can't argue with some of the things and some of the prices that are there. And so the parking lot is just packed every day, packed and packed and packed and packed. And my wife was like, why are so many people here? And I said, they would normally be shopping somewhere else, Target or another department store or something like that. They've had to trade down to shopping at Walmart. And you could just see it in the demographics. Like, I'm not trying to be, point anyone out specifically, but I'm just saying, when you look around at Walmart, like, you could tell, like, the cars in the Walmart parking lot have gotten a lot nicer. Right? Like, it used to be, you're like, oh, I'm at Walmart. Like, you know, there's a 1998, Honda Accord sitting next to me. Like, I know where I'm at. Nowadays, it's like brand new car, but people are doing their grocery shopping at Walmart, right? And I don't think it's because people are choosing to do it out of their own, you know, desire to shop at Walmart. I don't think people love Walmart, right? I mean, there's probably a handful, but I think a lot of people feel forced to do it. And that's just a hallmark of what's happening. And unfortunately, I don't think it's going to get any better. I think it's just going to be more of the same. And so the Federal Reserve is going to put as many band-aids on this situation as possible to keep it that way for an extended period of time. So I think people need to get more accustomed to that and they need to adjust. Okay. There's a number of people out there that are trying to bring truth to the masses so that they understand what they're going to be confronted with and so that they can help protect them over that period of time. There's a lot of things that you could be doing. I think the worst thing that you could do is nothing, right? The best thing that you could do is read, listen, learn, try and figure some stuff out that in the past you've been like, I don't understand how that works, but you know what? I'm like, ignorance is bliss. I really don't care. You need to know the difference. You need to know the difference between money and currency. You need to know what inflation actually is. It is not corporate greed. Okay. Corporate greed is a constant. There's no such thing as inflation because there's more or less corporate greed. There's always a lot of corporate greed, especially in the United States. But that being said, those conditions are going to be constant for a while. So you have to prepare. Have to. All right. That's my diatribe for the day. I'm going to go right back to the charts to look through a couple of other things really quickly. So we already covered the crypto situation. If you're following something in crypto that I'm not following, let me know. I want to know about it. It's the freaking Wild West. There's so much going on. Okay. I'll bring you what I'm looking at and you tell me what you're looking at, because there's tons of stuff out there. This idea. Oh, and I talked about the gold and silver backed cryptos. So there's actually a couple out there I'm going to be looking at. This is KAU. Both of these are by the organization or the company that backs it is called Kinesis. Okay. And again, I mean, as a purist in crypto, I want disintermediation, right? I don't want a centralized caretaker. Unfortunately, you know, gold and silver backed crypto hasn't been on the forefront of this movement. And so you still have some of these centralized custodians and caretakers for the actual physical gold and silver. They will need to find a way to disintermediate it in the future, so that there's not just one custodian, but then you still have faith that the gold and silver is there and it's being taken care of and it's being audited or confirmed somehow through the blockchain, right? But so in the meantime, we kind of, you know, make do with what we can. So this is KAU. KAU is the gold-backed cryptocurrency that Kinesis developed. And as you could see, it has some like big swings every single day, or this is a 4-hour chart. So like there's some big swings and some prints up and down. So if you're ever going to go in and kind of like buy this, and I think buying these things on an exchange, you might not want to do that. I think you might be better off just kind of opening an account with them to do it that way, because they'll take on the risk of these kind of big swings. Though that being said, this being tradable on an exchange does offer an interesting opportunity for some arbitrage here, because depending on the daily, just let me see how this thing moves on like a 15-minute basis. And again, I'm not advocating that anyone day trade or short-term trade or anything like that, but I mean, there's some VIG here, right? Like you could be looking at some kind of VIG, especially if you had like some kind of robo trading platform or something to arbitrage the high and the low of the day using limit orders so that you don't get blown out of the water. But I digress. That's probably beyond most folks that are going to end up watching this or listening to this. So don't try and dip your toe into that water. But what I am saying is they have a gold-backed cryptocurrency. They have a silver one. That's KAG. Okay. And if you notice, like just in general, these things aren't to the moon the way Bitcoin is. They do kind of like undulate back and forth with the price of gold and silver. And so as you would imagine, they track with gold and silver. Now, the percentage move isn't always the same. So like, for instance, silver's down today, a little over a percentage point. You know, KAG's down 8% based off of yesterday's close. But that being said, in the average or net, it does track. So like right now, KAG's price is like $24.57. And if I swap over to the actual silver futures, silver's at $24.45. So it's pretty close, right? Like it's not perfect, but it's pretty close. And so I think what you're going to see is there's going to be more of an attraction to gold and silver over time. And I really want to see something along the line of a hard money backed crypto be successful, because I think that is the perfect marriage. And it really has to be figured out. And if it does, I think that would actually be at least an option, right? Like I think crypto is going to have tons of options for what the future looks like, you know, monetarily and from a business standpoint, especially if you're anti-centralized, you know, central banking and centralized kind of fiat currencies. This could be, you know, a gold and silver backed crypto could be an answer. And I would really love to see it be successful. So just something to keep an eye on. Copper, kind of a quiet day. Copper is just kind of sitting pat where it is at $3.93. Oil, oil's also kind of like flattish, and oil's just been kind of like gravitating higher. Something of note is the inflation numbers today. the core was up, but what they consider like the super core was down. And so that the majority of the increase in inflation in this reading, at least, they attributed to gas. So basically energy prices and to housing. And that was like 6/10 of the overall increase. So just something to keep an eye on. Oil continues to hold its own and hasn't really made any gigantic moves one way or the other. So it's going to be interesting to see where that breaks up or down and how that ends up affecting the overall, you know, economic environment. The dollar is getting a little bit of relief today. Strangely, higher inflation, and yet it's, you know, the dollar goes up. That typically doesn't correspond, but this could be just, you know, some internal market mechanics happening. People that have been short the dollar taking some profit. And if you saw, you know, yesterday or the day before, we had a nice big move down here on this candle. So whenever things happen like that, someone made a decent amount of money on the short side, they use that opportunity to lighten up on their position. And probably that's causing a little bit of a gravitation higher within the dollar here today. So something to keep an eye on. All right, let's look at fixed income. High yield bonds still just kind of like plugging along. We're sitting right at this line. It's just day after day. We're just sitting at that line. I could actually envision a scenario where we just kind of like gravitate through it and move higher. All right. This could look like, and I can actually throw this in right now, this could be a big kind of consolidation pattern. So this high yield corporate debt that a lot of people are kind of watching as a proxy for risk in the market. You know, we've got like we've got a channel here or a range that this has been trading in over an extended period of time leading up to this resistance line. And so if that breaks through and moves higher, again, that's risk on, right? That could be the Federal Reserve cutting interest rates. And now all of a sudden we're moving higher, which, by the way, you better believe that gold, silver, Bitcoin, they're all going to rally hard on that, because that's also going to be an inflationary portion of the cycle, or an exacerbation of the inflationary portion of the cycle. And then U.S. Treasuries yields are higher. So people are selling U.S. Treasuries. Looks like they're using the proceeds to rotate into the market and buy risk assets. Again, the bubble just kind of grows in some of these areas. And actually, speaking of bubbles, let me pull up the bubble king. This is NVIDIA, back up 5%. Now, here's something to watch. I was live Friday when this thing popped, okay? It's now been two trading days. So it popped, big pullback. I believe the number that most of the market influencers that I watch stated was basically $250 billion in market cap got wiped away from the very top of this move on Friday to the very bottom, okay? It's coming back up. Now, something to watch here is on either an hourly basis or even on a daily basis, what does the relative strength look like when it comes back up here to re-challenge this high? Okay. Someone said the other day, oh, like, you know, this or that fell or whatever from an all-time high. I was like, there's always a retest, or at least there's always an attempted retest. The market always tries to revalidate these levels. Okay. So they'll revalidate a high, they'll revalidate a low. If there's a resistance line like Bitcoin has had at the all-time high, once it pokes through, so at some point in time, it will revisit it to try and validate it, because just breaking it isn't enough validation. You have to break it and then you have to hold it in order for that to actually be a valid pricing to show that there's enough demand at that price level. Same thing's true here for NVIDIA. We're going to see what kind of conviction there is. The relative strength after this high has come down, as you would expect from selling. Now the question becomes, on the subsequent rise back up to retest this high, what does the relative strength look like? If it doesn't rise appreciably, it's a good chance that this was actually, you know, we're nearing the turning point or the top of NVIDIA. So just a point of caution if you are playing in the casino. All right. And the last thing I'm going to look at is, and I've pulled this up on my watch list, URA is the ETF that I'm going to be watching in terms of uranium. Uranium again, and if I pull up the actual price of uranium, you'll see continues to pull back a little bit in terms of the overall price of uranium. I've said it once, I'll say it again. I think uranium is the oil of the future. I think you're going to see a lot of interest or growing interest in nuclear here into the future. So uranium is the key to that. And the price of uranium, like I said, has dropped a little bit. And I have to look at this on a longer term time frame just because the market for uranium is very thin. So it just kind of prints like in like a single price every single day. But if you look at it, we topped out up here at about 106. It's now pulled back to roughly 90, 90 and change. I think that pullback could continue a little bit. But if you are looking to put some money to work in the actual, you know, casino part of the markets, you could look at averaging in a little bit to some URA to get some exposure to uranium. So just a thought, it's something I'm going to be looking at. I'm not buying, full disclosure, I'm not a financial guru. I'm not a licensed financial planner or anything like that. So whatever I say is obviously just my opinion and what I'm looking at, what I'm doing. So I'm going to tell you that in the near future, I'm probably going to be putting some dollar cost average money to work in URA or another ETF proxy for uranium. Up to you. You can do that too, or you could be like, he's an idiot. That doesn't work for me. That's a valid response as well. So with that, look, I want to thank you. Yet another day in the books. Again, reminder, I'm here Monday through Friday, every Monday through Friday at noon Eastern. And definitely want to hear your comments, your questions, your feedback. Definitely sub, help me out with the algo. And with that, I'm pretty good. So I appreciate you. I love you. Peace.